I know we have yet to touch our ceiling. We have yet to touch the best possible, you know, performance we can put out there. We ain't did nothing yet. And I think this whole entire room, we got another level we could take it to. To be honest, man, I ain't hungry. Coach Style always say hungry dogs run fast. I ain't hungry. I'm starving for this. This means so much to me, and I know everything is in front of us. And I don't have to give y'all no rah-rah speech. I shouldn't have to give nobody in this room no get up and go, no go-go juice, no none of that. It's understood. It's understood who we are. It's understood what we work for, and it's understood what we want to accomplish. But it takes everybody. It takes everybody.
That was Jalen Hurts giving his pregame speech before the Giants game on Saturday night. I almost said Sunday for a second, but Saturday night is when they played. So welcome, everybody, to the Where Eagles Dare podcast with Lee and Tubby. Whether you're watching us on Facebook Live, YouTube, or Twitch, we want to thank you for being here. If you're one of our regular podcast listeners on Amazon Music, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, and so many other providers, thank you for that as well. If you have a comment, you can leave them in the comments section of any of the live streams. You can also email us at our email address at lee.byrd, that's lee.byrd.eaglesdare@gmail.com. Now, before we get into the game against the Giants and break it down for you, which was just an epic victory in the divisional round, we got to do like we do every time the Eagles win and let the music play. And I tell you what a victory it was. I mean, it was a dominating victory over the New York Giants. The Giants barely show up in this game, and the Eagles go on to a 38-7 victory in the divisional round. A very, very strong showing against a team that not all, but a lot of prognosticators out there, ESPN included, were talking about Danny Dimes and how much better Daniel Jones was than Jalen Hurts. We heard it all week, and a lot of people picked the Eagles in this game, but it was still the same old stuff, the little bit of a disrespect. But in the end, the Eagles came out 38-7, and before we get into the actual breakdown of the game itself, want to go over some things. If you look at the scoreboard, I mean, just seriously, every quarter to quarter, 14 points in the first quarter, 14 in the second, none in the third. The Giants did score a touchdown then. That was their quarter. And then 10 in the fourth for just a dominating victory. I love this picture of the guy in the Rey Mysterio mask doing the jump dive. It almost reminds me of like the Buffalo fans, except that we won our game and they didn't. You know, it's also interesting about 38-7 is that is eerily the same score that the Eagles beat the Vikings back in January 21st of 2018, beating the Case Keenum-led Vikings in the NFC Championship game on January 21st. Crazy enough, but yes, that's the same exact score. Hopefully we get a similar score on this NFC Championship game. Really want to talk about the San Francisco game, but we're going to save that to our game preview on Thursday. Today we're going to basically talk about the Giants and what the Eagles did. They basically achieved what they have not done before, and that's beating a team three times in one season. And that was really my primary concern because we've seen teams that do this. You beat somebody twice. They know your ins and outs. They didn't look that great against them at the end of the season. And a little bit of a comment there. That's great. What up, Bird? Absolute crushing victory this weekend. Can't wait for this matchup against the 49ers. We can't wait either. It's tough. It's already Tuesday, and we're ready to go right now. So it's good stuff. But yeah, nice. Swept the Giants like it was a three-game series in baseball, which was great. And another interesting fact about it is for the first time in their 98-year history, the Giants lost three games to the same team in a season. You knew that the Eagles were going to be good in this game. You really did. I think we both were pretty confident. It's just you get that negativity in your ear, and you get the three times in the season, oh, you barely beat our backups. Even though 6 weeks ago, We beat them 48-22, beat them like a drum. It was one of the best games of the season for the Eagles. So you kind of knew that they knew going in. Sometimes you get that weird, you know, where you come out and they know your game plan and they come out really a lot more motivated. I mentioned that I thought that the Giants looked way too loose in practice this week. They did not look as determined. They looked like a team that was still partying over their beating of the Minnesota Vikings and really didn't take the Eagles seriously enough, in my opinion. And it really cost them. What'd you think?
I just thought the same as I thought all year. We were better than them. We were better than them. We shown that we were better than them. We beat the brakes off of them before. So I think what makes it like a non-fluke, or like, you know, even when you hear Daboll, you know, speaking after the game, look, man, we just hammered them. This wasn't a fluke. We were just the better football team. The only thing that they had was that we thought could hurt us was Saquon. But we knew we can deal with Daniel Jones. We've dealt with him. You know, I mean, it's not like we have like a severe history of losing to Daniel Jones. We don't. And we whooped up on them earlier in the season when they were at their, you know, not early in the season, but, you know, when they were feeling themselves, we crushed them, you know. So, yeah, man, it was very reminiscent of last year of us playing the Bucks, where we just go into a team that's just playing way better than you guys. You know, another 9-win team, you know, like the Eagles were last year. We were a 9-win team. And we just really just really held that number one seed really high, and we backed it up. 38-7 is a number one seed type of victory. So, like I said last week, man, I was glad that we got this draw. I thought the Giants was a very good draw for us. You know, I think we would have been a dogfight if we play anybody else. But, you know, to escape this game relatively healthy, while, you know, I'm sure the Giants gave up at halftime, at least probably felt like that on the field a little bit. So, yeah, man, you know, confidence is really high. I was really impressed by just the overall game plan.
Gotcha. Yeah, the thing is that I almost fell for the media. And actually, I was starting to get really upset with, like, I don't watch a lot of the national stuff, but it's because they just don't like the Eagles. It's a lot of disrespect, and it just annoys me. So I usually just watch the local stuff. I just watch the local Philly guys. But, you know, you can't help but notice and hear things, and then you see all this Daniel Jones stuff, this dominating victory over the Vikings. And I almost bought into it, and there was a guy on one of the sites I follow, Edge of Philly Sports, and he came out with a speech, and he said, just look at the numbers. This is a team that has only won 3 games in their last 10 going into the playoffs before they beat Minnesota. And one of those was a draw with the Commanders. And I was like, you know, that's right. This is not, this is a good team. You make the playoffs, you're a good team. But this was not a great team. And you look across the board at the Giants. They don't have a premier wide receiver. Their offensive line is average at best. They don't have defensive backs that can stay. They have a few. I won't be honest. They do have a decent pass defense, but they don't have a good run defense. They don't have linebackers that put the fear of God into you for the most part. Kayvon Thibodeau is crazy, but you can run on him.
Right.
And the stats showed that. So I was kind of like, yeah, I almost fell for it, but in the end I didn't. And neither did the Philly fans, because they started off before the game even started. They went off because it's a conspiracy theory. I don't know if it's proven. But for some weird reason, the hot water, or the water period in the Giants hotel the night before, the water main busted and they had no water in the hotel that they stayed at, which no showers, no. When you're in a hotel and there's no water, that kind of sucks. So it could have been, you know, a natural occurrence. It could have been Eagles fans doing that. I don't know. No one can prove anything. But they're saying, you know, it says here on this tweet, Carl Banks was clearly thinking that it was the Eagles fans that did it. Another thing that I loved about the Eagles fans going into this game was this tweet right here. It just showed that the Eagles fans wanted to show up to tailgate early, but because they were the late game, it didn't start until 4:00. So they couldn't get into tailgate. So what they did was, being creative, the NLL Wings was across the street in the lot. And the Eagles fans bought tickets to that game so that they could get into their lot at 8 a.m. so they could start tailgating. So they bought tickets to a lacrosse game they weren't even going to go to. just so they could get the tailgating started all day. And we said it last week. I said, it's kind of crazy for the NFL to schedule a game in Philly at 8 o'clock at night, knowing full well what the Birds fans were going to do. It was a crazy start. Also, this was really funny. You know, Peyton and Eli were there. Eli, of course, because he never said he was never coming back to Philly ever again after what they did to him. But he came back to support the Giants. The Eagles fans got a billboard that gave him a double bird, which was great. I thought that was hilarious. And then Peyton Manning brings his son to the game, and he's wearing a Jalen Hurts jersey. Not an Uncle Eli jersey, a Jalen Hurts jersey. And you mentioned before that Jalen and Peyton have kind of a history. They have a little bit of friendship there.
Yeah, man. It seems like in the past, Jalen has attended some of the Manning camps. So, you know, he puts those on, you know, quarterback clinics and things like that. And, yeah, it seems like they definitely have a relationship outside of I can say outside of football, but yeah, they know each other, and obviously, you know, they probably watch a lot of football, and I'm sure his son requested that jersey. Let me get the Jalen Hurts jersey, you know, because he knows a baller when he sees one.
He's a smart kid, I'll tell you that. I got my Jalen Hurts jersey at the start of the season. He had a lot to choose from. Could have chose AJ Brown, Devontae Smith. I wanted a new jersey, and I did it because I believed that Jalen was going to have a breakout year this year. I truly did. In my heart, and he's did. No matter what happens from here on out, Jalen did what we wanted him to do. We said at the start of the season, you know, win the division, possibly make it to the playoffs and win a playoff game. So they've done all of those things. Everything else is gravy. We want more as fans, of course. It'd be silly not to, but everything else is gravy. So to the game itself, you know what was astonishing for me? Something I did something I rarely do. The game ended. And it was a Saturday night, so I was having a few drinks. It was still early left in the evening. So I actually went over to my fireplace, lit a fire, and then put the game on and started watching it over again. I haven't done that in a long time, like right afterwards. And watching it through a second time that night, it just struck me. Because first, when you watch it, you're all nervous. Then you watch it with a critical eye, knowing they're going to win. The first drive was like the Eagles coming out to make a statement right off the bat. They had the quick run, and I thought, okay, they're gonna try to establish the run. Then the deep ball to Devontae Smith for, I think, 42 yards down the sideline. It was just unbelievable throw and catch to set the tone for what this was going to be like. And then just pounded the ball with Miles Sanders and Gainwell and just got, I mean, it was such a sweet opening drive to get it. And this catch by Devontae Smith was just outstanding over the shoulder. He had the defensive back had to catch back up to him. He was wide open. They caught him flat footed. I think the Giants really maybe thought the Eagles were not going to go to the air right away because they weren't prepared. They were playing down low, and I think the Eagles made them pay. And then the rest of the game, they kept waiting for another one of these that really never came. Another one of these plays. Eagles didn't go back to it. It was like they set it up, and once you complete it, they're looking over their shoulder the whole time, like Devontae was when he caught this pass. But then that led to this, which was just an amazing play by Dallas Goedert. Look at this one-handed catch, you know, that he ends up turning into a touchdown. And Eagles are on the board 7-0. Just a great start. What did you think of the start to that game?
I mean, it was ideal, man. You know, business as usual. You know, the Eagles, you know, the way we kind of limped into the playoffs with injuries, you know, we hadn't seen this type of performance from the Birds in a few weeks. You know, we got, which also shows that, you know, how spoiled we got. We got really used to like a high octane offense. We get the ball, we score, we come away with points. We're like, hey, what's going on? As you can see, that wasn't really consistent throughout the rest of the playoffs for the most part. You know, points are hard to come by in the playoffs, particularly. But yeah, man, incredible start. Great catch by Goddard. I mean, are you kidding me? Great catch by Goddard. So yeah, man. Everything just kind of worked. I thought they had a good game plan, and I definitely can tell that they were pretty motivated.
You know, we said it was kind of funny because we did on our preview last week. We each had a different opinion on what we wanted to see to open this game. And you said you wanted to see the first two offensive possessions. You wanted to see them come at the Giants and go at their weak spots. You wanted to see them run the ball with somebody other than Hurts effectively. And I said my key was what type of defense Gannon was going to do for the first two defensive drives. Yeah. Was he going to be aggressive against Daniel Jones and try to get to him and cover the wide receivers and not let him get open? And actually cover the middle too, because Cager, the last time they played, kind of manipulated the middle. Right. And we both kind of got what we wanted, because after the Eagles' first possession on offense, which I thought was great that they got it, rather than we usually like to see them get it to start the second half. But in this case, they got it to start the game, and I thought that was great because it really helped them get some points and go, go on. And then on defense, it started off rough. I'm going to admit, the Daniel Jones, the little roll out there and the throw down the field to Breida that was covered, but no play made. And then they end up getting Barkley down to the 35-yard line. I was like, okay, here we go. They're probably going to come away with points in this one. So I was kind of worried about Gannon there. But then our boy Hassan Reddick took over. And I said last week, I had this weird dream where I woke up and Hassan Reddick had, two or three sacks, and the Eagles had six overall, and it was almost, they had five. But Hassan Reddick gets the sack on Daniel Jones, forces him into a fourth and eight, and then they decide to go for it from their 42, 43-yard line. And I had a friend of mine who was a Giants fan who texted me and said, I knew that they'd lost even that early in the game when they went for it on fourth down, because they didn't want to play defense. That was too aggressive for them. And it gave the Eagles great field position, because Hassan Reddick comes in, Daniel Jones tries to throw it away, but he's already in the grasp, and the Eagles get another sack right off the bat. After that, outside of the drive in the third quarter, Gannon's defense, there was a lot of three and outs or six and outs. It was very little that the Giants did every single time they got the ball, which really surprised me for a Gannon defense. It really did, because normally he is that bend but don't break. You see him move the ball to the 40 or 50 and put the Eagles in really bad field position. Right. But not this time. Not this time.
They had five drives, three of them were three and outs. One of them was a turnover on downs, and the other one was interception. I mean, that's so. If they weren't three and out, they turned the ball over. I mean, that's a hell of a first half, and obviously, the points are a result of it. I mean, that was just pure domination, and just Brennan again, man, put something up. Says I'm happy to see the transition from NCAA to NFL for Smith. He's done well. A lot of people talk about his size, but let's remember he's a Heisman winner for a reason. Love his talent and speed. And, in the beginning of the year, I thought AJ was his number one guy. But towards the end of the season, Devontae, I mean, their numbers, they both are 1,000-yard plus, yada, yada, yada. But it seems like Devontae has made a lot of really, both of them. Say comparison is the thief of joy. But I'm just saying 1A, instead of like, 1 and 2 is like 1A and 1B is my point overall, because we needed Devontae. We needed that second wide receiver. We have what a lot of other teams don't have, and that's that second wide receiver that can play at the level of your number one receiver. And it's just another luxury that the Eagles have, man. So, yeah, man.
And he is skinny Batman for a reason. He's very slender, but man, he doesn't play that way. He plays very physical. You think he'd break with as many hits as he takes, but he's durable. He catches just about everything that's thrown his way, except for the pass in the third quarter that is just a rare bobble by him because he hadn't secured it. But he catches just about everything. He's so dependable. And yeah, got the second touchdown on a great block by A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown had a few good plays on that second drive as well, extending drives. But the big thing about the Eagles' drives, especially in the first half, was what they did on the ground. Granted, we had the Goddard touchdown, you had the Smith touchdown, but then you got Sanders, Gainwell, and Boston Scott basically took over this game. Right. We saw Hurts run a little bit, but because of the shoulder and the injury, he went down a little bit earlier than he would normally. But not always. There was a couple times there down around the goal line where Jalen just dove for it and said, look, we're here to win this game. So but he didn't try to do it all. That was the one thing I liked about Jalen in this game, is he didn't try to do it all with his legs. He did it when it was absolutely necessary. Right. And the rest, he tried to make sure that he handed the ball off. A lot of times on those run pass options, on those RPOs, we will see Jalen take it himself. In over 50% of the time, Jalen is the one taking it, but not on Saturday night. We saw him handing the ball off a lot of those RPOs, and it was the right call because his running backs, all three of them, were bursting through the Giants' line for big gains over and over again.
It seemed like they had Thibodeau spying on him a little bit, and you could tell that every time he would see Thibodeau, he'd just hand the ball off. Like you said, they were really good reads. Just about every drive was a good drive, except for the one where you have the false start. Like we always have like some type of it's like we don't hurt ourselves, then we just move down the field most of the time. Right. And then when we do, it's like our drive stall really quickly. And the only three and out for us, you know, of that half, you have the third and eight, you know, you're feeling good. You're up 14, so you're feeling like, yeah, we're gonna get this third and eight, then you have the false start. So you're like, man. And then we get the incomplete to Smith and you punt, but I was still okay with that. I was still okay with that, man. So it was, you know, just throughout the whole game. And then, like you said, man, once they got the ball back and Danny Dimes has already been sacked a bunch of times, that's what you want to do against any quarterback. You hit him early.
Right.
I know we're holding off for the Niners, but the same thing we need to do next week. Just hit him early. And most quarterbacks in the NFL, nobody's immune. Brady's the same way. Most quarterbacks in the NFL, if you hit them early, they remember because that's the one thing they don't want, man. They don't want to get hit. And we got the Danny pretty early. So now you start to see those ghosts. After you've been hit, you start to see ghosts of what you think is there. And you start to anticipate that they're coming a lot faster than they actually are, and which leads to more turnover. So, you know, great play call by Gannon all the way around. Because if you're stopping everything, it's just great play call all the way around, man. Even on the second, was it like the third drive, fourth drive, well, second drive for them, when Bradberry comes up with the pick,
right?
Like the irony of Bradberry getting this pick so early on in the game. On top of that, you know, it's like you either get the game sealer or the one that deflates them. And being down 14-0, and then you throw a pick to a guy that you cut.
Yeah.
It's a lot of mind games there. I want to make another point. Last year in the playoffs, the Buccaneers, you know, he can't read. About talking about Jalen.
Right.
And what was so crazy to me is that you have a coach in Brian Daboll who knows him intimately. Right. He was his offensive coordinator at Bama. Right. He knows this. He knows what he's capable of. And he hung up. You see what he hung up 28 on him in the first half of a guy that you're supposed to know. Yep. What I'm saying is it's easy to kick a guy when he's down. That's the whole point. But Jalen can play. That's why he's made it to the NFL. That's why he is a starter on the team. So just wanted to see what difference a year makes against a guy that knows you. He played extremely well. And just a play call all around, just the epitome of complimentary football was in this game for us, for sure.
Jalen's pass rating 112, which was outstanding. Didn't throw for a ton of yards, but he ran enough. I think total yards was over 200. So he did play a hell of a game, but you got to love the 268 yards on the ground by the running backs, which unbelievable. But the thing you said that makes a lot of sense is that, yeah, it's still going on right now. Don't want to get too much into the 49er game. But even this week, they're talking about ranking the four best quarterbacks in the league, and we're still hearing Jalen at number four. That, to me, is a motivator. I'm dying to see what he does on Sunday based on the fact that everybody continues to sell this guy short when all he does is produce. I don't think that people have really seen all that Jalen can do. We've watched him each and every week,
right?
Every single game, and we see what this guy does on the field, not just in the passing game, but as a leader.
Right.
And when you've got that guy, you know it. The thing that you said about Daniel Jones was correct, too, because he was rushing a lot of his throws after the first few sacks because the pressure was so heavy and everybody was covered. It was one of those things where Slay and Bradberry, I think they had one catch on them the entire night. On the wide receivers. So he had nowhere to go. And one of the things you want to do when you win a football game, it's the old adage. What do you want to do to win a football game? You want to be able to run the ball effectively in the trenches, and you want to be able to stop the run. And that's exactly what the Eagles did. Saquon Barkley had one big run in the entire game. One big run.
one.
And that was, let's see, it was the, he had a 39-yard run, which was a bad one. In this, I think that was in the second or the third quarter. But right. he finished the game with 9 carries for 61 yards. Your top running back, who wants a lot of money, who wants a new contract, and yet we held them again. And like we've talked about on this podcast. Yeah, exactly. Everybody on our team.
Starter, by the way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. I'm sorry.
Sanders had 90.
Like our backup, like our second rusher, leading rusher, did better than Saquon. That's what I meant. Because that backup is not our backup.
Exactly. So it's one of those things where the Eagles did everything right. They stopped the run and they ran the ball effectively. Jalen did the right thing by handing off. And then, like I say, the third drive, we got what we normally get with the same. We got to mention this guy. He only had 6 carries for 32 yards, but a 5.3 carry average. Boston Scott, the Giant killer, the guy that scores against the Giants. And it was nice that you knew we wanted to see him get one at the goal line. He forced his way in. Mm-hmm. He was going to get that touchdown. And I wanted to show this graphic because Wink Martindale said that Boston Scott was not a Giant killer. But look at this graph, dude. This is Boston Scott's career touchdowns.
Man.
What stands out on this pie chart, man? 11 touchdowns against the New York Giants in his career. The next most is Detroit with 3 and Washington 2. Dude loves to get up to play the Giants and put the Eagles up 21-0, and it was one thing after the other. Then at the end of the half, another masterful drive, which we love to see by the Eagles toward the end of a half, is just being able to come down the field at will, run the ball effectively, and we get the ball with Jalen Hurts to run, which I thought was a really great play because, honestly, I don't think that was a designed run. I think it was the ball. You see, the ball was snapped, and it hit him in the face mask, and he just took off. He knew that it was going to be a busted play, and you could see that there was a gap. And if he didn't take it right away, I do not believe that was a designed run for Jalen.
You know, I'm not really sure if it was like, you remember the Bears game, that audible where he just runs straight up the field. Like he sees something that he knows that he has the numbers. You know, it's something. He couldn't wait to take off. He knew pre-snap that he was going to run that ball, because I think that's why he even juggled it a little bit, because he just knew, just give me this damn ball. I'm going to the left, and nothing they can do about it. And he was absolutely right. So it also shows, you know, his maturation as well. Like he know before the play, this is a touchdown. Give me the ball. But you also have to need the quarterback that can do it. So that's just, while they're on their heels and everything's working for us, I think it is just a killer, man. When Jalen is now running on you too, it's just like, oh, it just beat us another way.
I don't know how you go into that half down in a big divisional playoff game. But here's the thing, is that we saw it with the Chargers, Jags. We've seen it all year with the comeback. So I wasn't like completely elated. Yeah. It's just a half of football. You know, the Chargers were up 27-0 and lost. So I wasn't going to sell it. But I know that the assistant coach for Daboll, this was him in the locker room telling Daboll to throw the damn towel. The Rocky Four. But yeah, it's and at that point, I think they actually, to be honest with you, I think they almost did. Because if you go this play in the second half right here, it doesn't get any worse than that. When you have a wide open receiver streaking down, there's nobody around. This was completely blown coverage. And you want to talk about everything going the Eagles' way. This is the things going the Eagles' way in this thing. Yeah. Not only are they dominant, they can't even get a gift touchdown. So then after that, what really blew me away was the second half. Of course, we end up pulling Jalen in the fourth quarter, and Gainwell gets a big touchdown, which was amazing. You know, they score 10 points in the fourth quarter after the Giants had one good drive that resulted in touchdown. I'll give it to you. That play from Breida where Barkley lined up under center and Breida ends up getting the handoff for the touchdown. Yeah. That was a good play. The Eagles were flat-footed. They didn't know what to expect in that, especially when Jones moved out from under center. But it's kind of funny that Daniel Jones didn't score a touchdown against the Eagles under center at all. It was Barkley who was under center for that play. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
But it was that after that, it was the fourth quarter was ours. It just kind of grinded it out, ran out the clock, and walk away with the win. And it was just had this feeling of, because there was a time in that game, I think it was in the early in the fourth quarter, like 12 minutes to go, where the Giants had a fourth down on the other, just on the their side of the 50, and they punted. Yeah. And I was like, wow, it was like a fourth and five, fourth, maybe a little bit longer than that. It wasn't double digits. And they punted. And I went, huh, I would be pretty pissed off at my team if we're in a division playoff game and we're down by multiple scores.
Right.
And you pretty much go, eh.
it makes no sense. This is from an offensive coach, too. Yeah. You know, Brian Daboll was an offensive coach, man. You don't have anything in your arsenal that can get you something right here when your team wants to go for it. Like everybody wants you, your fans do. On Twitter, I noticed like that was one of the biggest things they started getting down on him about, was about that call right there. But it also shows how well the Eagles defense was playing, because a confident coach goes for it there. But a coach that's like, look, I hear you guys, but these guys have our number. Besides that Saquon run, they were never really in scoring position. You know, it never really felt like they were threatening on any drive. They look like a 9-7-1 team. That has a lot of work to do. But the Eagles are undoubtedly the kings of that division. We can't talk about the Giants. Definitely can't. The Commanders can't even, they're not even in the conversation. You didn't even make the playoffs.
Yep.
Dallas absolutely shit the bed. I don't want to say it was just a tough matchup. It was a tough grinded out matchup. And I thought once Pollard went down, that was the biggest difference in that game, because Zeke, something, I don't know if it's just partying or something, but he's okay. I don't believe that football is the most important thing in Ezekiel Elliott's life. Mm. I don't know the guy, but I don't believe that that's his top priority. He just doesn't have that force. He's still a very young guy, and he doesn't have that pop that he used to. He doesn't feel like he's just kind of going through the motions. All right, I'll get the ball between the tackles, run for five, fall, run for a few, fall. But he's not, he didn't really have any fire in him. So, but I guess that Niners defense can take it out of you like that, man, because they were up against it. But I thought the biggest difference in that game, sorry to get so sidetracked, was the Pollard injury, which was a, but I say that because it's a dirty tackle.
Right.
It was the same tackle on Mahomes. That little knee, you know, where they stick that knee out and land on you. I was like, that looked like a very intentional tackle to hurt him. I didn't respect the tackle at all. But I thought that's why the Cowboys was derailed from there, because they didn't have that swing pass they like to throw to Pollard, or just that change of pace that he provides on a very dirty tackle. I think it wasn't even talked about enough in the booth. I was like, man, it was no reason for him to stick his knee out and put it down on the back of Pollard's leg like that.
Yeah.
It made no sense. And same thing happened to Mahomes. It's a very dirty tackle. There's no reason to stick your knee out right there. Both of them was very dirty, and you've seen both of them result in immediate injury.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you. Pollard going out, as much as I dislike the Cowboys, and we both know how much we both cannot stand that team. And I have a lot of friends who are Cowboys fans. I felt for them in that instance, because no one wants to see somebody go out like that. And then for the players to be laughing about it on the sideline showed a lack of class, when you just broke somebody's ankle. It's just not cool. It's not a good look. It worries me going into this game, to see, cause we've got some guys that are just a little bit banged up, knowing that these guys are willing to do that to win a game. So we'll see what happens. Oh, yeah. We'll talk more about the 49ers, and we'll break down a little bit of that Cowboys game on Thursday when we do the NFC Championship game preview. But going back to the Giants game, you know, ended up with a dominant win. We don't really need to say too much about it. Just covering some of the aftermath. I love this tweet from Hassan Reddick. This, to me, is a great tweet. I follow all these guys on Twitter, but I loved this one only because this was his first playoff game. This was so big to him. He talked about it all week. This guy has been the difference maker for this defense. I know Brandon Graham has had a great year, and Sweat has had an amazing year. But Hassan Reddick, getting him, to me, was the biggest GM move other than A.J. Brown. AJ Brown was probably the best GM move that Howie Roseman made this year, but getting Hassan Reddick has been the second. 16 sacks, 2 in this game. It's just, yeah, an amazing player. So it's great to see that. Another thing that I loved about the game was Sirianni. Our coach, man, let's talk about our coach for a second, because he's a nut, but he's all in on this team. This is C.J. Gardner-Johnson giving him his dig chain that he put on, and he got to dance around the locker room wearing it.
So this guy, the Dream Chasers chain.
The Dream Chasers, that's right, D.C., that's what it is. Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's good stuff. And so Sirianni's awesome. I'm going to show a couple of quick videos about this. This is one from the Pat McAfee. I love this. This is about the Sirianni, what he was doing during this game.
They have an entire collage of Sirianni being awesome on the sideline. He is playing in the game. He starts out spitting on himself.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a little thicker than I thought.
That's understandable.
Then there's a chest bump with Spike Man.
Yep.
Shane Spike Man. And there's the look at the camera, nod. Yeah. How you doing? Yeah, that's me.
Is that strength coach right there?
For sure. He has a tat sticking out of the bottom of that.
And this is one of the other ones I liked was, this is a real quick one. This is when he was trying to go for two near the end of the half, and he ran down the sideline to call timeout to stop it, and the ref yelled at him for being past the 20.
Oh yeah,
and I don't. Hopefully this one comes through. This is what Nick said to the ref.
Nobody budging. Now a timeout. And one of those.
Just great stuff. He yells at the ref, "I'm allowed to be down here. I know what the hell I'm doing down here." Is great. So yeah, Nick was really heavily invested in the game.
When that play was happening live, sitting down there with Ish and the wife, and I was telling her, because you can't hear the audio, you know, live, but I was telling her, I said, that ref is telling him, you can't go past the 20. Because, you know, I'm a ref, you know, out here, and it's the same thing I have to do. You can't go past the 20. And he was just telling them, yo, stay in that coach's box. It's from the 20-yard line to the – they run from the 20 to the 20. It's really for the official's protection, because you got a coach right behind you and you have to make a real fast, you know, run down the line. So it's a reason that's cleared out. But coaches don't care. In that moment, they'll always run down there and do that. But what a lot of officiating crews will do, and that's why he thought Sirianni was kind of showing them up, they'll keep a guy next to the coach. They'll keep somebody over there, like if it's a tight situation, or like this is your guy. So anyway, but Sirianni, man, he was making a rap video with all the slow motions and
you got to know that he heard it all. Yeah, he heard it all this week too. The Eagles, they hear their own press, and so they had something to prove, and they do again this week. So we'll see how it goes. The thing that he said in the press conference afterwards was that. He's not as young as he used to be. When he was in his 20s, he could sprint down there and get that timeout. Mm-hmm. But he didn't have that luxury in this game. So he was going to make sure he was right next to that, because basically they were going to try to get the Giants to jump so they could get a 2-point conversion from the one, and it didn't happen. But speaking of Sirianni, one of the things he said after the game, which is just great stuff, this is an amazing quote that he said about Jalen, and I buy into this 100%. He says, "I know this is high praise, but to have him out there is like having, I'm not sure I should go there, Michael Jordan out there. He's your leader. He's your guy, hopefully. That's the biggest respect I could pay to him, comparing his ability to be on the field to a Michael Jordan type thing. This guy leads. He brings this calmness to the entire team. He plays great football. He's as tough as they come. To me, there's nobody playing any better football than him." And that's what we're talking about when we talk about Jalen Hurts. Mm-hmm. The world has not seen this yet. The people who have, they acknowledge it.
Oh, yeah.
But the rest of the world has seen Mahomes. They see Joe Burrow, both great quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But Jalen Hurts' name deserves to be up there with them. And it will be.
I thought it was way too hyperbolic for me. Way too hyperbolic. Because here is the problem with that. You can never associate Michael Jordan with anyone that has not won a championship, just fundamentally, because it brings Jordan's greatness down, right? To get that type of praise without having won the ultimate goal, because that's what we know Jordan for. Now, I understand in the context, but I thought it was a a very giddy coach that just won his first playoff game, was feeling himself, and made an extremely, made a very hyperbolic comment. You don't need to put that type of pressure on Jalen. It's just not needed. That's something you say after a Super Bowl win, but I don't think it's something that you say before the NFC Championship game. Maybe if he gets you into the Super Bowl with some type of last second shot, and then you said it reminds you of Jordan against Cleveland. Okay. But you cannot make Jordan references without championships. It's always, so I was a little cringe when he said that, but you know, it's just not needed. It's the same way, right? I thought that Jalen didn't need to wear the 45 I'm back shirt, because I'm like, you're only wearing that shirt because Minshew played so bad that we need you to come back. And Minshew won one of those games, the shirt wouldn't have been necessary.
Right.
And that's why I said that we needed Minshew to win one of those games just for balance, because now there's like this over desire, you know, and now he's going to, man, I wish we had the meme. Did you see the one when Jeffrey Lurie is standing at Hurts' locker after the game?
I saw the picture. I didn't see a meme.
The picture. I'm sorry. Not the, the meme was like, caption this, and everybody's under it like, all right, man, just don't hurt me too much in the offseason on negotiation talks. You know, they were just
right.
Saying just all of these things. And it's always a good thing when the boss comes to you. It's one thing to be summoned to the boss's office, but it's one thing for them to come up to you and say, hey, buddy,
right?
How's it going? So I don't like the Jordan references either, from Jalen showing up with the t-shirt on. Like, you can feel that mentally, but you have to win the chip first. I just think it sets you up for a harder fall. People love to see people fall, especially when they're feeling themselves or when they're up. And it just gives people ammo, because you can now use that back as like another meme. Oh, you think you Jordan, now your coach referring you as Jordan. I just think it's unnecessary.
Right. I think a couple of things.
Unnecessary.
I think a couple of things to rebut on that. I do agree with your point that he hasn't won a championship, so he can't really compare him to Jordan. I do get that. But the couple of things, number one, nobody's paying attention to what the Eagles are saying. Nobody is. Nobody does. We could say that he's the greatest ever. We could say he's better than Joe Montana, and no one's going to even, ESPN's not even going to pick it up, because nobody's watching us right now. They're watching, they're watching Joe Money in Cincy beat the Bills. They're watching Mahomes on one ankle. They're watching a Mr. Irrelevant beat the Cowboys, and we're the last game that anybody cared about. So that's one thing. The other thing is that I think the Jordan references come because that is Jalen Hurts' guy. He has motivational Jordan posters in his locker room. So I think that that association comes from his play, but I think it also becomes an association because that's his hero. And I think that's why he wore the shirt. I don't think it meant anything other than that, is that that's who he's emulating to be. Maybe it's unfair to compare him to his hero right now,
right?
But that's who he emulates. And I do appreciate that from Jalen. You know that he has zero focus right now and he wants to be that guy. But it's a good point to make. I know that I'm happy where Jalen is in his progression. We'll talk about the 49er game. Like I said, a lot can happen in the NFC Championship game. Nothing is given. And we will break that down on Thursday. Before we get to that, though, we want to just break down some numbers from this game. Some interesting stuff. The Eagles' 268 rushing yards were the second most in team playoff history, trailing only 274 yards in the 1949 championship game. It's the most rushing yards by any NFL team in a postseason game since the 49ers had 285 yards versus the Packers in 2019's NFC championship game. So great job. That was a total team effort on that rushing yards. Like I said, Gainwell, 121 total yards from scrimmage. He had 112 rushing yards. But his 121 total yards from scrimmage were the most by an Eagle in a postseason game since Jeremy Maclin's 146 yards against Dallas in January 2010. So props to Gainwell. Sanders, again, who had 90. It was just an unbelievable day for the Eagles running backs. Best passer rating performances in Eagles playoff history. You got Rodney Peete versus the Lions in 95. I remember that game. 143.3, which was an amazing game for Rodney. Nick Foles against the Vikings in 2018, the other 38-7 game, 141.4. And then Jalen Hurts versus the Giants. So coming in third already in his second full year as a starter, and Jalen Hurts has the third best passing rating performance in history. We talked about James Bradbury. got the INT against his former team. I love that he bowed to their sideline. He did the Karate Kid bow, which is just amazing to me. But James Bradbury's stats, he had one of the best games of his career on Saturday. Only targeted four times that he got targeted. One catch allowed for 3 yards, one interceptions, two forced incompletions, 0.0 passer rating allowed by Bradbury. And Slay had himself a game too. It was a good.
You telling me this guy is so bad that you only throw to him four times, but you don't want him on your team? Okay.
The tweets have been great about why didn't you pay this guy, and the Giants fans go, we didn't, it wasn't that. Yeah, it is. You didn't. You cut him. You didn't even offer him. Of course, the Eagles recorded 5 sacks on Saturday night. That was their most in a playoff game in the Super Bowl era. And of course, leading the way in those sacks was Brandon Graham, other than Hassan Reddick. And with his sack on Daniel Jones, Brandon Graham with 4.5 passed Reggie White, 4.5 sacks total in his playoff career, passed Reggie White, Derek Burgess, and Hugh Douglas for the most playoff sacks in Eagles history. But get this, he played 12 snaps. I didn't even realize that. We have such a deep defensive line that rotates constantly, and he is a little bit dinged up. He played 12 snaps and had 2 tackles, a sack, a quarterback hit, and a tackle for loss in 12 snaps. Brandon Graham is back. This has been, to me, I don't think he'll get it because, again, nobody watches Philadelphia. Been a comeback player of the year type situation, considering his injury last year that kept him out the entire season. And then to come back and have this kind of performance, Brandon Graham deserves much love. He has been a cornerstone leader, and he has been somebody that we respect. And I want to play real quick, hopefully this plays really well, Brandon Graham's words to the Eagle locker room after the victory.
I just want to say one thing. The week that we put together, that's what showed up out there. We worked our ass off. So, man, let's do that each and every day, man. Don't take no moment for granted. You know what I'm saying? Because that right there, that's what we showed up all week. All week, it showed up out there, man. So don't get it twisted. It's on us. It's on us. And it's how we prepare each and every week. Go ahead, Jalen.
Exact same thing he just said. We prepared our best and we played our best. When our best was needed. I don't put no levels to this. Put no limit to this. Continue to grow and continue to lay everything on the line right now. Lay everything on the line. These are once in a lifetime opportunities we got right in front of us in our hands. So what the you gonna do? What you gonna do?
I love the ending of that when he's looking right at the camera. Jalen Hurts looking right at the camera. What are you going to do? And one of the things I love about it is we saw all the dancing right after the game. This is when the dancing's over and they're all back to business again. It isn't like the Vikings when they had the big win and they're all dancing on the plane and Kirk Cousins has gone nuts. It isn't like the Giants after they beat the Vikings and they're dancing all week in practice. This is a team that's serious right now, whether they win it all or not.
Right.
You can't deny how serious they are about it and how prepared they are. Now, a team that wasn't necessarily prepared, we talked a little bit about it. So before we leave, we're just going to have a little bit of fun. And then we're going to have some more fun on Thursday when we talk about this game. I've been saying all year, people have been saying Dak Prescott's better than Jalen Hurts. Man leads the league in NFL interceptions. And when he threw the picks on against San Francisco, I was like, there you go. There it is. They said on I think it was First Take, one of those shows, that Dak Prescott has not had a game where he hasn't had at least a pick in every other game. So he hasn't strung together 2 games in a row where he's not turned the ball over in 48 games. So he has not had 2 games without a turnover in a 48-game span. It was LeSean McCoy that called him ass earlier in the year and got a lot of flack for it. It's like, to me, is when are you going to stop overhyping this dude because he wears the star? I think the funny thing is we're going to show it on Thursday. We're going to show the montage of all the Cowboys fans burning their Dak Prescott jerseys, smashing their team. Some of the most ridiculous crap I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
They throw the biggest fits of any fan base that you ever want to see. Mm-hmm. And they've been throwing fits since 1996. So they got a patent on this crap. It is what it is.
That's a big burn pit. I'll tell you what, before you before you move past that one. When it comes to Dak, you know, this is like you said, the biggest point is that he's wearing a star. If he's in any other with team, they just go, get him again next year, buddy. You know, but when you're wearing that star and you have this inflated ideal of your team, which a lot of Cowboys fans do, they have just a few players play well, but Dak didn't play well. And when you looked around, you know, if you can't get the ball to CeeDee Lamb, you know, little plays, Schultz here, there, they just never looked in it. And because, you know, the Niners defense didn't look that dominant. I mean, they looked good, but they didn't look that dominant. I don't know what Bosa's stats were. I know that's their top guy, but they didn't look dominant. You know, they rotate their line in as well. Well, Bosa goes out and, you know, kind of like the Eagles. That's why it's going to make for a hell of a matchup. But, you know, yeah, I mean, they played absolutely horrible. And at 19-12, but with the real Dallas Cowboys, please stand up. You know, this is a team that lost when they needed to win against the Commanders at the end of the year. They needed to win that game, and they absolutely shit the bed against the Commanders. They didn't know the Eagles were going to win as well. They had the opportunity is the point, and this is what we've seen when they've had two opportunities. He's basically a Kirk Cousins.
He's going to say that.
He's going to have you some really good seasons, regular seasons, but when you need him the most – He's just not going to give you what you want. And because look what we just did to a team that Kirk Cousins lost to.
Right.
Look what we just did to a Kirk Cousins team. So they becoming like the same people. And I don't want to take everything away from the Niners. They are a really good team.
Yeah, they are.
They are the best defense in pro football this year. Yeah. So you understand it. But it's that second, I think it was the first pick. It was just a really bad pick. I think that's what people understand that interceptions happen. I think it's how they happen. You know, if you lose like more so of like a 50-50, we go, okay, we threw it to CeeDee Lamb. They both high point the ball, and the other guy came down with it. But CeeDee had a chance. His receivers didn't have a chance on some of those. And that's what makes poor interceptions, which leads to all that negative energy towards that. And, yeah, man. But quarterbacks don't just pop out from nowhere. You got to build them. So
exactly, and they saw a game against the Bucs, against a team that couldn't even beat the Panthers on the last day of the season, and they were ate up about a performance from Dak, 5 touchdowns, wherever it was, and they were all full of themselves when they don't even acknowledge that it's an 8-9 team. It's one of the things the Eagles can't fall into a trap this week and pump themselves up by beating the Giants, because we know what the Giants were. We already destroyed them twice.
Right.
And the Cowboys had beaten them twice. They're not the best team out there. Right. All due respect, they had a good season, but they were the third team in the NFC East, and be honest with you. Mm-hmm. So it showed when Pollard went out how one-dimensional or no-dimensional the Cowboys became without Pollard, because he really does a lot for that team. And without him, they were lost. Again, more stats on the Cowboys. Only two NFL teams with a playoff winning percentage below 250 over the last 26 NFL seasons. The Lions at 0. They are 0-5 in the last 26 years. And the Cowboys are 4-11 over the last 26 years, which is just unbelievable. Here's a nice little meme for you. And this is one of my favorite segments. It is the... This is one of my favorite Cowboy memes I saw this week. But I think this is an old one. But you can use it every year. It never goes out of style. So our Hell to the Naw this week is how to spot a counterfeit NFC Championship game ticket. Very thin paper, fake barcode, and it says the word Cowboys on it. That's the first thing you got to look for. If it says that, you have not got an NFC Championship game. Can't punch it. Can't seem to get there. And whether the Eagles win or not, we got there this year. So that's a good thing. Here's something that you sent me, which I thought was an amazing read. I thought this was awesome. Cowboys played in the NFC Championship game on January 21st, 1996. Jalen Hurts was born on August 7th, 1998. So that means that Jalen grew up, learned how to play football, squatted 600 pounds, graduated college, got drafted by the Eagles, and made it to the NFC Championship game. And Dallas still hasn't been to one in Jalen's lifetime, a year before Jalen's lifetime.
Unbelievable.
That is, that says a lot. And yet they want to hold up their five rings or how many and talk crap. Dude, all your highlights are on VHS. We know that joke, and it's the truth. You got nothing in Blu-ray, that's for sure. You don't really have anything in DVD. That's how crazy it is. Damn, but Dallas, you gotta go back to the drawing board. They've got to figure this out. They thought it was their year.
I blame it all on Jerry. I don't think anybody can operate in that type of environment where the guy writing the checks is also the ones picking them. I think you have to, I don't know, say a church and state. You have to separate it, bro. It's the reason why it works for other teams. And yeah, it worked for you, but let's be very clear how they had their success. The coaches that were there were already monumental guys in the college game, right? Jimmy Johnson and Switzer. Right, Switzer was at Oklahoma, right? Big time guy at Oklahoma and Miami. I mean, no team was more famous than the Miami Dolphins. Mm-hmm. The Miami Hurricanes.
Yes, Hurricanes, yep.
You know, with Michael Irvin and all those guys down there. That in that trade, you know, I'll give them one thing, that Herschel Walker trade, and they just got a lot of blue chip guys that, you know, really, 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 really stuck it out. So I think until you have a situation like maybe the Bill Parcells era where he would say, you know, if you want me to cook, let me buy the groceries. Unless you get a coach that can come in there with that type of swag and bravado to tell you, hey, Jerry, sit down, man. I have this, bro. Sit down. I just think he's way too involved with that team to be successful.
I agree. I was around during the 90s and watched them win the Super Bowl era, and they were a great team. That's the last really great, great team that they've had. But yet the fans seem to think that every year is a great team, and it's never going to be as good as Irvin, Aikman, and Emmitt Smith. It just isn't. It isn't going to get as good as when they had T.O. for a little bit. It's just not. And the way they're going to get back to it is by starting to realize that. This year was probably one of their better teams, but they let Amari Cooper go inexplicably in the offseason, which was a big reason why they were the number one offense last year. And then, like you said, you build your team around Pollard and Zeke and CeeDee, but you don't really have – they had some decent receivers backing them up. Gallup and Brown are okay, but their offensive line, they've lost so many pieces of that offensive line that was a cornerstone of that team.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they got a couple of really good defensive players. But you have a weak side corner. You have Trayvon Diggs, which is great, but then you got your weak side corner that gets burnt. So it makes it really hard. They had a really good team. I'm not going to slag them too hard. They had a really good team, but they did not have a championship team. And we've been saying it all year, was that you need to check yourself. This is, dudes, you keep losing to games like Jacksonville and losing games to Washington. Now, we know Jacksonville made the playoffs, but the Eagles beat Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about how great you are compared to the Eagles when you haven't done anything yet. And that's what Cowboys fans do, is they talk before they achieve. And that's a problem. Speaking of somebody who talks
you made a good point. I just wanted to hit on that real quick.
Yeah.
Where is the, when you talk about like the, what they haven't done, where is the, you got rid of Amari Cooper, but who did you bring in?
None.
You know, but if you look at the teams that are doing well, like the Eagles and the Niners, you got the Christian McCaffrey trade, which is, they win the Super Bowl. It's going to go down as one of the greatest midseason trade, and Lynch is going to look like an absolute genius. He already does because of that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you bring in guys like that, and then you have, what did the Eagles do? And Howie, what did Howie do? He brought in AJ, one of the best offseason free agent signing, in Hassan Reddick. Now, he's from Camden, so it wasn't too much of a push to get him to come. Still. But I'm saying is, the teams that you see excelling are the ones that made the biggest and best moves in the offseason. So there is no – people are like, Niners, Eagles, eh, that makes sense.
Yeah. The Cowboys, like you said, they did nothing.
Nothing.
In free agency or trading, nothing. And people wonder, they brought in T.Y. Hilton, an old – receiver that and he did nothing when they brought him in. So whatever. Another one who ran his mouth a lot was Micah Parsons, and I love it. Since Micah Parsons called Jalen Hurd a system QB, the Cowboys went 3-3 with wins over two backup QBs and the Bucks. Dak threw 8 interceptions, and Parsons recorded less than a half a sack per game, which is still kind of impressive. A half a sack per game is still.
100%. I was like, those are huge stats. Because if you couldn't even get him down to zero, you probably should have left that out.
Yeah. So yeah, that part I would delete. But the rest of it is pretty good.
Half a game? Shoot.
The rest of it's pretty good. Right. But it says, you know, he talks about Jalen Hurts, and he tried to make that dig before the Cowboys game. Then didn't even face Jalen Hurts. That's the only thing I regret, is that the Eagles and Cowboys aren't playing this weekend, just to prove once and for all.
Not me.
They'll get to play next year.
Not
they'll me. Get to play. I
Not
know.
Me. Lee. I told the wife this earlier. If the Cowboys would have beat the Eagles to go to the Super Bowl, I'm not sure when I would have been able to watch football again. It would have did a lot more to me than just a foot. I would have just, I'm sorry. Anybody but the Cowboys. I am sorry, but I'm not sorry. Anybody but the Cowboys. It would have just felt like how it would have felt bad if the Cowboys beat the Eagles, go to the Super Bowl. I agree with you. This would be a nightmare.
I said it when the game started. I have a ton of friends that are Cowboys fans. I don't know why, but I do, and I love them. It is what it is. And I told him, I said, yeah, it would be great to have that third game again. But part of me inside was, for another reason, no, I don't want the Cowboys in the NFC Championship. My heart was saying, no, I don't want them in the NFC Championship game because I just don't want to see them there. And number two is that, again, it's that familiarity, you know, that we don't want to see them again, because who knows what could happen in that situation.
Exactly.
We're going to talk about the 49ers on Thursday on our preview. So tune in for that, 7:00. We're going to talk about the 49ers matchup. But until then, though, like I said, we're facing a team that's an unknown to us. So we have tape on them, but we've never played them. They've never played us. So this is, I can accept it. And I honestly, if the Eagles lose in the NFC Championship game, I can accept it. It'll hurt. But I would be devastated if they lost to the Cowboys in the NFC. The only thing good about them playing the Cowboys in the NFC Championship game is if they would have beaten the Cowboys in the NFC Championship.
The only thing. And the risk was too high.
I'm being honest.
The risk was too high.
Why risk it? Exactly. I agree with you. So before we go tonight, I do want to play a tribute to the Cowboys season. This is to all our Cowboys fans out there. That are now having to deal with the social media onslaught, because everybody in the world, not just the U.S., is giving you guys so much grief. And I feel for you. I understand. Part of me says you brought it on yourself, but we know that it's tough when everybody is against you and they don't like you, and they're letting you know how happy they are that you've been eliminated. So this goes out to all our Cowboy fans that don't listen to this podcast, but we don't care anyway. Here we go.
I did my best, but I guess my best wasn't good enough. 'Cause here we are back where we were before. Just once, can we figure out what we keep doing wrong?
It's brilliant. I love it. I wish there was a full 2.5 minutes of that. I could watch that all day.
Man, that is hilarious.
And we're gonna have some fun with that on Thursday. We got more to talk about with the Cowboys 49ers, because we do want to break that down a little bit to get into the Eagles 49ers, because we want to break down what they did right against the Cowboys and what the Eagles can do against the 49ers. But that's it. That's the next game. NFC Championship game, Eagles versus the 49ers on January 29th, this Sunday at 3:00. The NFL wised up and didn't make us the late game so that they don't have a bunch of drunk Eagles fans roaming around waiting, chomping at the bit for this game. I don't know if that hurts or helps us. We will talk about it on Thursday when we do the preview for that game. But anyway, thank you for joining us on the live stream, whether you did that on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. Thank you for being with us. Also, we want to give a thanks to all of our podcast listeners. You've been great this year. Whether you're listening to us on Amazon Music, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts, or any of the other providers out there, there's so many of our biggest listeners are on Stitcher, for crying out loud. We have like 50 subscribers on Stitcher. I don't know how that happens, but I don't even do a lot on Stitcher for like advertising. It just works out. I didn't know people use Stitcher. I just put it out there and people listen. So that's good. So anyway, we will be back on Thursday to do the preview for the NFC Championship game. But it was a great weekend. It was so much fun to see the Eagles win on Saturday and the Cowboys lose on Sunday. You can't get any better than that, especially after the Christmas Eve we had and they ruined our Christmas Eve. Now we get to enjoy our January. So that's a good thing. And now we look forward to what they can do, and we'll talk about it on Thursday against the 49ers. With that all being said, I'm going to turn it over for Tubby for his final words of the night.
Yes, sir, man. Thanks for everybody for tuning into the Word Was There podcast. Lee, your boy Tubby. And, man, walkover for the Giants, it was a walkover. If you watch tennis, or it was a walkover. They never stood a chance. And, for our team to make it to one of the final and the end of the NFC, we were playing in the last game in our conference that weekend before the big game. You can't ask for more out of your team. Like, you literally cannot ask for more. You have to get to this point before you reach your ultimate goal. So this has been a pleasure all season, man. I'm going to continue to enjoy every time I see those Eagles helmets fly out on the field. With that being said, man, fly, Eagles, fly.
And go Birds. We'll see you guys on Thursday night. Tune in for our NFC Championship game preview.